Welcome to the Fish Nerds. It's a celebration of fish, fishing, and eating fish that is always interesting, usually funny, and mostly true. I'm Taylor Miller of Icy Eels Fishing Team, and here are the nerds.
I'm Clay Grove, Chief Executive Fish Nerd of the Fish Nerd Podcast, and I am no fish expert.
I'm Paul, and I'm not a fish expert.
I'm Donna, and I am not a fish expert either.
Cool, and anything is fair game. It's a good bet that you're going to want to binge a new podcast after this show. Check out the Varmint Podcast everywhere podcasts are found. I'm so lucky because, I can't tell you how lucky I am. I have Paul and Donna from the Varmints podcast co-hosting. I'm co-hosts tonight. Welcome to the show.
Hi, thanks for having us.
Thank you.
And I got to tell you, I found you guys on one of the podcast Facebook groups about podcasting.
Oh.
I made a comment, I think, and Paul commented back, and he mentioned your show, and I listened to every single episode of the Varmints podcast. And I think I did it all in about 3 days' time.
Because, oh, that's neat. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for that.
Because you guys approach animals the same way I approach fish. And the approach is this. I don't know enough stuff. That's your approach. You don't know enough stuff about animals. So a few years ago, my friend David, my original co-host of this show, we went on a quest to catch and eat every kind of freshwater fish in New Hampshire. And in that quest, we actually learned every single fish, one fish at a time. And we wrote about each single fish. So we became, some people think of us as fish experts, we are not. We just learned about fish one fish at a time, and you are learning about animals one animal at a time, which I love. Great concept.
Thank you so much. Yeah, that came from just the fact of, like, I don't like listening to podcasts where the person who is the host of the podcast is the expert on something, and they will tell you that they're the expert on something, and they know everything. Those podcasts tend to be boring to me.
They can be.
Which
one do you hate the most?
Oh, I won't say that. The one that I will say that was kind of an inspiration to me was Stuff You Should Know.
That's a great podcast. Those guys are fantastic.
And those guys are not experts.
No.
They do the research. And sometimes in the middle of a podcast, they'll have a little revelation or they'll change their mind on a preconceived idea that they had. And that's fun to listen to. That's a lot more fun to listen to than somebody who is just going to sit there and lecture you and teach you, I think.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's one of my favorite podcasts, by the way. So the fact that you mentioned one of my faves, it's great. That means we're best friends.
I had somebody compare us to Stuff You Should Know one time, and it was like one of the best compliments I've ever gotten on my podcast.
That's cool. I used to get the Car Talk comparison when Dave and I were hitting this hard in the early days. So it's always
Car Talk.
Always a nice comparison to be compared to people who are kind of like heroes to you in a lot of ways. So
absolutely, yeah. Car Talk is great.
It's totally good. So Donna, you are newer to the show.
Mm-hmm.
What?
Yeah.
So did Paul kill his original co-host?
The body has not surfaced, so I don't think there's any evidence.
Cannot confirm or deny this.
No, I think that's exactly what we're talking about here. So
that's
I've got my eyes open. That's all I'll say.
Yeah. Now I'll tell you what happened because it's a pretty cool story.
Yeah.
So my original co-host is a guy named Paul Wilk, and he's a great guy.
You had two Pauls.
Two guys named Paul who were not animal experts.
Mm-hmm.
He's still a friend of mine, and he helped shape the show for the first 15 or 16 episodes. The podcast is what it is in large part because of his contributions and his continuing to encourage me to keep going with it. So I really appreciate all the help that he gave me. And he just got really busy with life. He's in grad school. He's got a kid on the way. He bought a house and something had to give.
Yeah,
and
kids
that something
ruin
was
everything.
The podcast.
Kids are the worst.
And I kind of knew it was coming. And we had our little Skype call on Saturday morning like we do. And he said, before we go any further, I got something to tell you. And I got that sinking feeling in my stomach like, oh, I know what's coming. And then, so I had about a half hour of sitting here wondering if I was going to continue with the podcast or not, because I really didn't know if I was going to have to just give it up or not. I was really kind of feeling a little bit down. So I decided that I wanted to keep going with the Varmints podcast, that it was something that I really enjoyed doing. So I got on our Slack channel, Blazing Caribou Network. They've been so wonderful and supportive. And I got on there at 12 o'clock sharp. I sent a message out that said, "Hey, my podcast co-host just left. I need another co-host. Can somebody fill in?" And I am not lying when I tell you that at 12:01, Donna sent me a message that said, "I've been wanting to do this podcast from the beginning. Sign me up."
And there it is.
Yeah, I was like, "Mr. Cotta, Mr. Cotta."
It's perfect.
I was that enthusiastic. And I did not believe I was going to get picked either, because I have such a high squeaky voice, and you know, I've been trying to do a podcast for several years, and every project that I've done so far has just not worked out for one reason or another. You know how it goes. It's hard to find something that really is sticky. And
it is.
Yeah. So, I mean, I started in, I think, 2008. With a podcast called Tyrannosaurus Regina.
I love the name.
Which was a gaming girls panel of all my girlfriends who game.
So nerdy.
Which is the majority. I think I only have one or two girlfriends that aren't gamers. And it was great, but life intervened. A couple of them had children, and one of them had some other stuff happen, and it just died a premature death before we even really got started. And then I had somebody mansplaining to me that Tyrannosaurus was too difficult to spell, so I needed to rename it, and I just got really...
Did you say mansplaining?
Yeah, you know.
What is that?
I mean, that's when a guy tells a woman something that he thinks she should know in a sort of officious and superior manner, like... "Well, let me tell you, little girl, you're just not doing it right," or whatever.
I do that.
And then I kind of was talking to some other podcasters later, and they were like, "It doesn't matter if Tyrannosaurus is hard to spell. They don't have to spell it. It'll just come up. They can spell it wrong, and Google will just tell them what they're looking for."
That's
so
a fair point.
Ignore that mansplain. And so I would have loved to have that show happen, but it just didn't for whatever reason. And then I just kind of for years was looking for another project to begin, and I tried a couple of different things on my own and just wasn't able to hit on something. And then when the Varmints show came to my network, which is Blazing Caribou, I was like, "Ah, I want to be on this show. Oh, they're not taking hosts. Darn it." Ah. So when Paul launched that little message of like, "Oh, we're looking for another co-host," I was like, me. And I got it, and I couldn't believe it. I think
everybody, how can I say no to that?
Everybody on the network wanted to be on his show because it is so fun. So
it's such a good show.
I was feeling really bad about the show, like I said, and I was wondering if I was even going to continue it or not. And then, yeah, it was more than Donna that just responded. It was like five people from the network that just piled on me all at once. "Let me do it. I want to do it. And that was a pretty good boost to my ego.
It's amazing when that happens. Now, that same thing happened to me, and for the exact same reason. My co-host, his life got busy. He had to quit. I put it out on Facebook. "Hey, I'm looking for help." And the Fish Nerds fans came through. A bunch of people who have already been really close to this show got together. We formed the Secret Society of Fish Nerds. And now we've got a private Facebook group with about 16 members who help now make my show happen. And it is what it is because of those people. And they produce now. I have segment producers now who just like make me 8-minute segments. I just plug them into the show, which for me is, you know, for an hour-long show, it's nice to have a little 8-minute piece to stick in there. And every week or every other week, a new kind of new concept comes forward. And I say yes to almost everything because the show is evolving right now. And I like the way the direction the show is going in. And the more diverse feedback we're getting, the better. And it's totally good. We're starting to go into more conservation-minded mode. We were, for a while, hardcore fishing. And now we're kind of pushing into the conservation world, which I really I want to be more in that world. It's a little nerdier and a little more fun for me.
So. That's what I like about your show is when I started listening, you were starting to get into the whole conservation thing. And your show isn't just about what spinnerbait is the best bait to use or where to catch fish. It's about conservation and hunting and just being responsible when you're, you know, in the outdoors doing anything, just kind of, you know, giving back to nature before you take from it. And I really like that about your podcast.
Yeah, well, thanks. And mostly when we want to have fun, that's mostly the goal, is to laugh a lot.
Oh, it is fun.
And so we don't want to do a How to Fish show. Those shows exist and they do a better job than I can do. Now, we do now have a new fly fishing segment, which I'm learning to fly fish. So that's coming up. But it's not going to be just that one thing. And so what I've been doing is cycling through co-hosts every week. I've had a different co-host every single week since Dave quit the show. And it's been a remarkable different show than since he left. And I actually killed him in the last episode he was on.
Oh, so, yeah.
And I played the beep at the end of the show, and that was it.
I'll have to listen to that.
Yeah.
I started listening to the last episode you did before we started recording this one, and I got distracted, but I want to go back to it because I sort of feel like I want to vicariously fish.
Mm-hmm.
I was fishing with my family a lot when I was growing up. My father's from Montana.
Montana, yeah.
Yeah, he's from Whitefish, Montana. And
Montana.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah.
He took us fishing a lot when we were children. It was one of the most common things for us to do. We didn't camp so much, but we'd go fishing a lot.
Now, did you fish for sustenance? Did you eat the fish or fish for photos?
We ate all the fish.
Wow.
We always went just for eating. We would go to this lake called, I think it's called Beaver Lake in Montana. And huge family vacation, big family gathering, and the children would fish for sunfish.
Mm-hmm.
In the shallows, and then our parents would fry them up for us, and so we'd eat those.
Delicious.
There's not a lot of meat on those guys, but they're really good.
They're yummy.
And then we had trout and, what else? I'm trying to remember what fish it was. Oh, pike. We had a lot of pike. I have a very clear and frustrating memory of being about 10 and fishing off the dock, just sort of randomly, just for my own entertainment, and I had the wrong bait and the wrong kind of hook for a pike, but that's what I got on the end of my line.
And what
I could
lesson,
see him down there.
What lesson did you learn there, by the way?
Well, I had to bring my tackle box with me.
The lesson is fish don't care. Like, lures don't matter.
It's true. It's true, but I couldn't pull him in because he kept biting my line.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
You have to have, for a pike, you have to have, what's the hook called with the long shank on the end?
Steel leader or
a... Yes, yeah. You have to have a steel leader for a pike because you can't use a small hook for them because they'll bite through the line. And that's what kept happening. And nobody would come and help me. I was just like, help, because I didn't have the right kind of hook because I didn't have my tackle box with me.
Oh, so
just kind of picked up my pole and went out there, doop-de-doo. So... he was the one that got away. But I was only 10, so it probably wasn't a super awesome, cool fish either, but it's just a vivid memory.
It's cooler that you were 10. When you're 10, fish are remarkably amazing things. And so I always, like, when people ask me, why do I love fish so much? And the reason I love fish is they're not biologically special. You know what that means? So if you're looking at a reptile, for example, tell me what makes a reptile a reptile. What's special about reptiles? You know, they have got backbones, right? They're cold-blooded, right?
Poikilothermic, yeah.
Yeah. Their babies look just like they do. They've got claws. They've got scales. You have all these things you know that makes it a reptile. When you do amphibians or mammals, you know, if you have these six things, you can say all mammals have these things in common. But name me two things that all fish have in common besides where they live.
Gills?
No,
gills.
Not all fish have gills, right?
So, really?
Oh,
yeah,
I didn't know that.
Yeah, not a thing. So give me, well, try again.
I can't even, scales.
Nope. No, catfish don't have scales. Lots of fish don't have scales.
Ah.
Yeah.
That's interesting.
Yeah.
That is interesting.
There's nothing. It's like you want to say, oh, they lay eggs. Nope. Some fish have live birth. Doesn't work.
How do they decide to put them in the fish category?
Where
then?
Else are you going to put them? They all fit.
You make a new category. That's usually what they do.
Yeah. No, but so what I really like is, when if you look at, like, from an evolutionary standpoint, is everything is in a fish. You want a fish with warm blood, we can find one. You want a fish that's cold-blooded? Most of them are cold-blooded. You want a fish that has bones? Yep. You want a fish with no bones? Yep, we got those too. You want a fish with scales? Yes. You want a fish with slime and skin and taste buds all over its outside of its body? We got those. You want fish that
has bones? Oh, that's wild.
We got those. You want fish that can live out of the water? We have those too. So they like, there's nothing special about each. Like, you can't pin them down.
And they're just really interesting to study then.
Yeah.
Yeah, I understand. Yeah.
Except for I've never seen one with fur. So I think maybe.
Well, yeah. Yeah. They probably don't really need it. But the plan for life is sort of, especially when you get in the water, it can just get extremely crazy. Like, they're just, so I'm not surprised at all.
That's, no, and they adapt so well. Really cool. They're so cool. That's what, for me, that's what fish are. It's like that animal that's not special, and that's what makes it special.
Sharks, because sharks are like, well, we've been around for 40 million years, and the only thing that we changed really was to get a little smaller.
Right.
You know? Like, the rest of it just works so well, it does not matter.
Well, it's funny, because so tonight we're doing a varmints speed round. Because I love your show and your format and all that, and I kind of want to rip you off a little bit, so I'm going to do it with you, and that way I don't feel
like I'm stealing it. That's fine.
And by the way, I honestly, to all the Fish Nerds listeners out there, if you're not already subscribed to the Varmints Podcast, and you want another really fun show to listen to, that's the next fun show. And it's just, you're just pure joy, the Varmints Podcast. So make sure you check that out anywhere you get your podcasts. So this is varmint speed round, and I chose a fish that I know you're going to like, Donna, because it is just like your sharks. It's old. It hasn't changed in 64 million years. And the animal is the Petromyzon marinus. Did you read about this fish at all?
I did. I took a little bit of a look around, and they're interesting little guys.
They're
for
really
sure.
Cool. This is the stone sucker of the sea, right? The sea lamprey.
I thought that's the best thing.
Great name.
Stone sucker.
Yeah, they used to give animals names based on like what they're doing, and now they name after people. So it's fun to have a fish. So
Petro is stone, and Myzen is sucking or sucker.
Yeah. I don't know. You've already exceeded my knowledge.
Well, I'm just wondering. I know Paul's looking at the word too, because we both like etymology a lot. So yeah,
that, and
we
know that works for me.
We know marinus is the sea, right? So I'll take your word for it.
But well, I don't trust me on it. I'm just guessing. So, I am not a lamprey expert.
No, neither am I. But I have had experience with lampreys, and we'll get into that in a little bit. And the reason I have experience with lampreys, I used to work at a fish ladder that allowed lampreys to migrate up the river to their spawning grounds.
Oh, cool.
And the reason call them the stone suckers of the sea, before I get into that, lampreys, a lot of people call them lamprey eels, which is a mistake because they are not even close to being an eel. Do you know what the difference between a lamprey and an eel?
No idea.
No.
Okay, the big difference is, first of all, I would say biologically, they're about as far apart as you can get. A lamprey has just a cartilaginous back bone, like just a one cartilage strip down its back, and that's its only kind of bone in its whole body. And down that, it has, you know, its spinal cord. And other than that, no other bones. And it is anadrous, which means born in freshwater, lives in the ocean, and comes back to freshwater again. And it has no jaw. Its mouth is a big circle full of teeth with a big suction cup mouth. And it's a parasite. It's like a 3-foot-long parasite.
Right.
Now, an eel is a bony fish, which means it has a backbone, lots of those kind of parts. It's born in the ocean, and then lives in freshwater and returns to the ocean again to spawn. So kind of like the opposite fish. The only similarity is they're long, eel-like fish. So that's the difference between two fish.
I could definitely recognize an eel if I saw a picture of him.
Sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah, Donna, where do you live?
I live in Colorado.
Colorado. Now, you have freshwater eels in Colorado.
I didn't know that.
All those eels in Colorado were actually born in the ocean, and they migrate all the way to Colorado. Yeah, but we're not talking about eels. That's
crazy.
That's American eels. But the lampreys don't get out where you are. You'll never see a lamprey in Colorado, but you'll see them in all the coastal rivers on the eastern seaboard of the United States, and I think in the
Florida?
West Coast. Yeah, Florida for sure.
Because that's where Paul is.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever seen a lamprey down here.
Actually, maybe not in Florida, but for sure up in the Northeast, but we have them here. Because this is where my expertise kind of goes funny. And when they migrate, they stack up on the rocks, sucking on the stones. hence stone sucker of the sea. They rest by sticking to rocks.
Okay.
Cool. So I'll go through a little bit of life cycle. They're born in fresh water, and when they're born, they are called amacete. They're just tiny little, you know, larvas of lampreys, and they filter feed. So they live in the mud, and they spit this bubble of goo up in the air, and it collects little microorganisms, and it sucks it back in its body, and they grow 7 to 10 years living in the mud. And then they And then they migrate to the ocean, where they become parasitic. And in 1 year's time, they go from being about 4 inches long to about 3 feet long, which makes one of the fastest growing animals on the planet.
Wow. And so by parasitic, do you mean that they like latch themselves onto the sides of fish?
Yeah, they actually they stick to the side of the fish with their big sucker mouth. Okay. And their tongue is like a drill bit. And their saliva is an anticoagulant, so it allows bleeding to happen. So they drill a little hole inside the fish, and they drink the juices out of the fish, the blood and whatever goo comes out of the fish. And they usually, in the ocean, they switch from host to host, rarely killing their host.
So we just did an episode on mosquitoes. So lampreys are like the mosquitoes of the ocean. Wherever they live.
Yeah.
Mosquitoes of the sea.
Yeah, and imagine them a little bit more. If you have a lamprey on you, it's probably worse than having a mosquito on you.
I would imagine so, yeah.
Yeah.
But they're really cool animals. And then they migrate and creep back to fresh water again to spawn. And they'll cross huge dams and waterways to get to their spawning grounds. And when they spawn, they'll get together in these big groups and they'll pick up rocks with their mouth, suck on those rocks, and they'll make these giant, like, horseshoe-shaped piles of rocks. And then they'll spawn on the inside of the horseshoe downstream, so the water pulls the eggs into the pile, and then they die.
I read. They immediately die after spawning.
And they actually digest their own innards and organs while they're migrating. So you consume all their body for energy.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, really.
That's cool. Crazy.
And when you see them in the rivers around here, they look like rusty pipes in the water. That's the color. It's like this mottled color. Imagine there's like stacks of 3-foot-long iron pipes in the river. So really cool animal, and we just love them. Now the problem is they got into the Great Lakes. We built a bunch of canals and allowed them to get to Lake Erie and Lake Michigan and all the big lakes out there, where they're problematic. So out there they will get into the big lakes and they will consume and kill a lot of the game fish that anglers like to catch, the big lake trout and walleyes and other kind of fish like that. And so in the Midwest, people hate them. But in New Hampshire, we're trying to get people to love them because they belong here. They're part of our ecosystem. They've been here for eons, and we need them around because they're the forage for everything else. So they're pretty great. Yeah,
they are really cool looking. I pulled up a bunch of pictures of them, and they have a little fishy eye and everything.
They actually have an eye like a sensor on top of their head, another sense that we don't know about.
That's cool.
Yeah, and I don't know enough about to talk on that one. So that's what a sea lamprey is. And on your show, you kind of run through all you give your background. And my favorite part of your show is you ask, are animals smart?
Yes.
Mm. Yeah, and I disagree with you on your rabbit smartness scale, by the way, Paul.
Okay, go. Okay.
I believe you gave rabbits like a 5 or something.
Yes.
Or a 6, and I just completely disagree.
Do you think they're dumber than that or smarter than that?
I think they're way dumber.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, way dumber. My friend, my daughter Zoe and I had this conversation on a podcast last week. We were talking about animals that taste good, and we decided that animals that are smart taste better than animals that are dumb. And
that's an interesting theory.
It was her theory. And we didn't discuss rabbits, but I believe they're not that smart. I used to have a pet rabbit, and
I think we said domestic rabbits aren't that bright, but the wild ones are brighter.
Oh, so, that's right. Yeah, the wild ones actually have to, like, solve problems, where the domestic ones actually have intelligence bred out of them. Uh-huh. They're bred to be dumb.
Right, and I read Watership Down, and that kind of implies the same thing in that book. So.
Oh, I love that book. We almost talked about that book in the pop culture part of that show.
We may have to do a second rabbits episode next year because there was just so much stuff.
Rabbits 2, Electric Boogaloo.
All right. Yes. So the question is, are lampreys smart? In your research, did you decide, are they smart or not smart?
So I wasn't able to find any information in specific about their intelligence. Mm-hmm. It doesn't look like there's anybody studying them mm-hmm. for that. And I wasn't able to see any evidence of, like, novel behaviors of, like, tool using or problem solving.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it sounds like the stuff that they do to get back to their spawning grounds is pretty complicated, but that doesn't necessarily indicate a problem-solving intelligence going on.
But, yeah, I agree with that. I didn't find anything either, and I think I try not to mistake innate behavior for intelligence. Like,
mm-hmm.
climbing up rocks is just what they do, and it's what they would do, and it's not, you know, they're not really solving problems, and I think I gave them, like, a 2 for intelligence.
Yeah, I don't think they're very smart either. I think it's just old.
They're a really old species, and they're a really neat species. I think they're interesting. I'd never known anything about it until you gave us the assignment to look them up. They were really interesting.
Well,
but I don't think they can do math.
No, they're terrible at math. I've tried that. And I've actually got to work with lampreys, which is really fun. And there's here's a really cool thing about sea lampreys. I was talking to a biologist at UNH who studies these things, and she studies them because they can regenerate their spinal cords, but which I think is amazing. And we're looking at them, when I say we, not, I don't mean me, I mean scientists, are looking at them to see if they can use that technology in humans. But I think it's really cool is that lampreys don't like men. Did you read that?
No, I never came across that at all.
So the first time I ever heard this incident happen was there was a worker working at UNH at nighttime, and he was changing a light bulb or something above the sea lamprey tank, and a drop of his sweat dropped into the sea lamprey tank. And in men's sweat, we've got a hormone called testosterone, right? And lampreys are very sensitive to testosterone. And apparently, this is a story I heard, all the lampreys jumped out of the tank. So in the middle of the night, they just panicked and just went crazy and jumped out of the water. So he had to call up in the middle of the night and get them back in. And then on the show Dirty Jobs, Mike Rowe did some work with sea lampreys, and the same thing happened. He spit in the tank, and all the lampreys jumped out.
That is crazy.
And then so I was working with lampreys 2 years ago, and I thought, I'm going to do this. And I got a video camera set up, and I spit in the tank. And they didn't do anything. So I'm not manly enough to get them worked up. So that's kind of a fun fact there. And so here's the question. Can you eat sea lampreys?
I mean, you can eat anything, right?
Sure.
You can eat them. They just don't seem super appetizing to me. What about you, Paul?
This seems to be like the running theme since Donna joined me is that I think I'm a much more adventurous eater than she is, and mm-hmm. I would certainly try sea lamprey.
Yeah,
I would try them. They just don't seem like food to me, but there you go.
In New Hampshire, they're part of our historic culture, and it's said that the Native Americans sustained on sea lampreys for a long time, smoked sea lampreys, and one of the reasons they loved them is they had no bones. So they would be really, really popular food item because the kids could eat them and wouldn't choke on them. And so here's a poem I'm going to read part of from Derryfield, New Hampshire, which is Manchester, New Hampshire. And this is by a person named Stark, who's one of the founders of our fair city. And they loved to stand on the slippery rock, which had stood through time amid the winter's shock, and the foamy waves below to feel with a iron crook for the squirming eel, and to stain their hands on garments o'er with the sticky slime of muddy gore. And they loved to fish though the lively night, and they loved to drink what they loved to fight. And when the Roman consul gave his feast on the rarest kind of bird and beast, 'twould have seemed to him a scanty meal if he failed to furnish a dainty eel. And I'm not going to read the whole thing, but basically, and they were calling them eels, but they were actually sea lampreys they were talking about in this poem. And it was the most common food in the old time in Manchester, New Hampshire. In Derryfield, New Hampshire. This is what everybody ate. And they fed everyone. So they were a common food. And I've eaten 2 sea lampreys.
How were they prepared? How did you have them?
The first one I ate, I was working at the fish ladder, and I read about them as a food source. And in Portugal, they sell lamprey for about $13 a pound for live lampreys. It's a delicacy. So I used a Portuguese lamprey recipe called Arroz de Lampreia. I got it. Arroz de Lampreia, which is lamprey over rice. And you take the lamprey and you blanch it in a pot and you string it up and you wipe the slime off and then you cut the tail off and you bleed it into a pot and you make rice and you cook the lamprey and you serve it. And it was terrible. It was like eating a nightmare. Just awful.
Oh, no.
Yeah, just bad.
Well,
most delicacies are not that great. That's why they're delicacies. So, and then a few years ago, when I was on the quest to catch all the fish in New Hampshire, I caught a lamprey. And when I say caught, I mean someone gave me one because they don't eat food. They eat blood. And the fishing game gave me one. And we cooked it like shrimp. I chopped up in small rings. I battered it and I fried it in oil. And it tasted like overcooked shrimp. Probably because I cooked it too much, but it was totally good, and I would eat them anytime. Yeah, tasted just like food.
So when something doesn't taste good, the moral of the story is to batter it and fry it, and it will drastically improve the flavor.
It's a beautiful life we live, isn't it?
It is.
When in doubt, batter and fry it. All right. How about some lamprey and pop culture?
I thought there was a sea lamprey character in SpongeBob SquarePants. I thought for sure there was a sea lamprey in there.
It should have been.
But there should have been, but there wasn't. The only time you see sea lampreys in SpongeBob SquarePants was in an episode called The Sewers of Bikini Bottom. And in this episode, Squidward and SpongeBob are trying to get to Mr. Krabs' safe, which contains the Krabby Patty secret formula. And Squidward pulls them out of the water. He pulls these two lampreys out of the water, and they're attached to his hands. They start to bite his hands, and then they latch onto his eyeballs, and SpongeBob has to pull them off and throw them back in the water. And that's the only place I found where there were sea lampreys, like in a cartoon or something. And at this point in our podcast, I would probably play a little sound clip or something from that.
Well, episode. Now I have to do that. So thanks.
You are welcome.
Yeah. So, and at fishnerds.com, I'll put a link up to the YouTube video of that cartoon.
I'm Mr. John. Leaping lampreys! They're biting me!
Well, bite them back!
How about you, Donna? What'd you find?
So I didn't look. I wasn't able to find very much, and I just found something like this instant. There's apparently a DC superheroes character called Lamprey. But she seems to have more. Yeah, no, she's in 14 issues, she seems to have eel-like powers. So
what powers?
I think I'd rather electricity, like electric eels.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
Bizarre.
Yeah, it is a little weird, and so you should go check that out. But what came immediately to mind, and it's not directly pop culture, but I mean, I suppose it is sort of indirectly because there's so many things about this person. But Henry I is said to have died from a surfeit of lampreys. And the evidence for this is pretty strong. It has a supporting primary source by his chronicler. And so what he said was that he'd eaten a bunch of lampreys and he died a few days later. And the chronicler wrote, "This food mortally chilled the old man's blood and caused a sudden and violent illness against which nature struggled and brought on an acute fever, trying to warm the body up," which is what they used to think, "in an effort to resist the worst effects of the disease." So it sounds like he probably died, I would guess, of food poisoning. He probably...
Yeah, it seems likely.
Seems like a pretty violent attack of some sort of food poisoning, either gone off or he got whatever's in them. Salmonella, I have no idea what would be in a lamprey that could kill you, but
no idea. And it's possible that it was something else also because of the time. So you could die from pretty near anything.
Oh, exactly. Well, it could have been anything, right? But it's just whatever. He's the one who has been rumored to have been died from eating too many lampreys. And it actually turns out to be true, mostly.
So Clay,
mm-hmm.
I see in the show notes here that there is a very alarming picture of you with a lamprey attached to your forearm just below the elbow.
Yeah, I ate that one.
So the obvious question, I guess, is did that hurt?
No, it did not hurt. And that was probably the 30th time I've had a lamprey stuck to me.
Oh, wow.
And the reason I put that up is because my pop culture, Jeremy Wade, who hosts the River Monsters show, described lampreys of attacking people in Lake Champlain. Lampreys simply do not attack humans. And it's really hard to get them to stick to you. You have to really work for it, but it makes great photos. It makes
Not their food. So they're like, okay. Like the lamprey has a box in its head of like, this is food and this isn't food, just like me. And you humans are in the not food box.
Right. Well, but they instinctively will suck onto things. So you can take a lamprey and stick it to your body and it will blow, create a vacuum on its sucker mouth and stick to you. And leave a huge hickey.
So well, I was thinking that it just had a friend like Paul, a Paul lamprey that was going, no, eat it. Eat it.
Delicious. I had huge bloody hickeys on me, and to get that one shot, which I think is the best photo of a lamprey biting me, that day I had to get bit about 7 or 8 times.
Oh my gosh.
I've stuck them to my neck. I've had friends put them on their faces. And every time you end up with a huge, like the mouth is about 2.5 inches across. So you end up with this huge circular bloody mess afterwards. You bleed a lot.
Right.
Now, the lamprey I had on me was not eating. So it was not drilling holes into me. It was simply creating a vacuum and sucking on. But the saliva being anticoagulant means you bleed more than you normally would. And it's a bloody, bloody mess. But it's so cool. And I ate that one. That's a female. Ate her right after she bit me. So we're even.
Or maybe was that the one you fried up?
Yeah, I fried her up. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep.
Yeah.
She was big. Yeah, she was fun.
Wow.
Yeah, but most people in this country do not eat sea lampreys, and most people in this country do not know what a sea lamprey is, even though it's a very, very common fish.
It sounds like we used to eat them more in the past, or at least they did on the East Coast.
But, well, remember, we used to be more opportunistic.
They definitely, true, and we used to eat them a lot more in Europe.
Yeah.
Now, I lived in England, and I was never fed a lamprey, and they eat a lot of weird stuff out there, so it must have gone out of fashion.
Yeah,
or
but you had fried
maybe
bread.
They're just not as available, or I mean, who knows, right?
Right, exactly. So that's a sea lamprey, and that was like a quick version of what you guys do. I kind of wanted to highlight that. So nice job on the sea lamprey.
Thank you.
Really fun fish for you.
All right.
Quick promo here. The FN Book Club. Every month we review a book on the Fish Nerds podcast. And this month, April, we're reviewing The Founding Fish. So if you've read the book, call 607-378-FISH and join our conversation. Do that before April 10th. If you haven't read the book, get in on that. The Founding Fish is all about the American shad. And it's totally good and interesting. It's going to make you want to go shad fishing. Have you guys ever seen shad before?
No.
No?
No.
Its Latin name means most delicious, Sabbatus sima. So,
does it live up to its name?
I have eaten them and they are yummy, but very bony. Should say most bony, but it does not. All right. And just to stick with our theme here, have a little fish in the news.
I love fish in the news.
I love fish in the news too.
I do too. And actually, I've used this story before, but I wanted to use it tonight because of our theme. And this is from, what website is this from? This is from The Seeker, which sounds like a real thing. Lamprey eels fall from the sky over Alaska. Eel-like lamprey fish mysteriously fell from the sky recently in Alaska, and here's why. Did you guys read this?
I did read it, yes. It's interesting.
It's not letting me look at it. Okay, the Arctic lamprey caught from the Yukon River. All right, several foot-long lampreys have apparently fallen out of the sky recently in Fairbanks, Alaska. They've been found in shopping carts, center parking lots, and out on lawns, and residents are unnerved by the creepy, toothed, eel-like fish. According to a story in Alaska News Miner, adult Arctic lampreys have fallen from the sky 4 times this week in Fairbanks, including on the Value Village parking lot. According to Alaska Department of Fish and Game, this is unusual for a fish that's seldom seen in the water up here. Do you think someone has to say it's unusual for a fish to fall from the sky? Or does everyone kind of inherently get that? So
maybe weirder things happen in Alaska that we don't know about.
I hope so, because it would make work living up there. so it goes on to talk about it could be a prank, it could be a seabird. What do you guys think would cause a fish to fall from the sky?
Well, birds are 90% of birds are jerks.
Mm-hmm, they are.
So it wouldn't surprise me if a bird was just picking up a sea lamprey and attempting to drop it on people or property.
Yeah.
Because they're just vindictive like that, especially seagulls.
Oh, the worst. They're worse.
I would assume that it's some sort of weird, like a lamprey tornado.
Ooh.
Lamp-nado.
Now, that would have to come out before Sharknado because they're an older fish, evolutionary speaking. Yeah. So
yeah.
I love it. Lamprey-nami.
Yeah, lamprey-nami.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I like that a lot.
Yeah. So I think the bird one or prank one is the best too. But the I love the concept of it's a scary tornado.
It's raining lampreys, hallelujah! It's raining lampreys.
It's a little catchy. I'm not going to read the whole story. I'll link it up at fishnerds.com. But it kind of goes into that area of like talking about how people are freaked out by animals that they don't recognize. And even though the Arctic lampreys live in Fairbanks, Alaska, the people who are finding them have never seen them before. So it really kind of, we're so scared of what we don't know. And I think human instinct is kill things you don't know. But I guess these were already dead because they're sitting in their shopping carts. So if I was a bird, by the way, I also would drop lampreys on people. But going back to your point about birds being jerks.
Yes.
We have chickens. We keep chickens here.
Okay.
By the way, did you get a lot of chicken recipes in your contest?
We are still accepting chicken recipe submissions.
I think
we know what the winner is going to be, but you should still have time.
I should send one in. But we keep chickens, and they are jerks. And if we were tiny, they would just kill us. So I think humans' best adaptation is our size. Because birds and other animals would just destroy us so fast if we were.
And there's a little. I saw a video of a little boy hugging his chicken, and the chicken's totally into it. She's like, "Oh, I love you."
Oh yeah. So, my chickens in the morning they knock on my door till I come outside and feed them. They love us, but I still think they would eat us.
Probably, but I don't think that. I don't know. That argument doesn't get a lot of traction from me because I'm like, yeah, so what? You're not small, so.
All right. I'm going to do a little fish quiz with you guys because I like to do fish quizzes with guests. And since you're from Colorado,
I'm going to fail all the questions.
Well, you're from Colorado, right?
Mm-hmm.
So that means you do drugs?
No.
Okay, so I'm going to, because they're legal there now, right? Aren't they?
It's legal to smoke marijuana here, yeah, but that doesn't mean we all do it.
Yeah. So I'm going to give you a quiz, and you have to tell me which one is the drug. So there'll be two will be fishing lures, like real names of fishing lures, and one will be a slang term for a drug. Not necessarily marijuana. Okay?
Okay. All right.
And you can work together on these. You can collaborate.
Okay.
All right.
Got it.
And there's big prizes here for sure.
Okay.
Right. So quiz one, question one, curly tail grub, goofballs, or daredevil? Which one's the drugs? And bonus points if you know the real name of the drugs.
I don't know what kind of drug it is, but I'm 99% sure it's goofballs. Because I think I heard it in a Saturday Night Live skit one time.
Probably you did. Those are barbiturates. I'll give you that one. All right. Number two, Mogi's.
Ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, I don't have any bells.
Ding,
ding. Mogi's, Sluggos, or Swedish Pimples?
What?
Mogi's,
wow.
Mogi's, Sluggos, or Swedish Pimples?
I'm going to say Swedish Pimples because I just think that's really funny.
How do you think a Swedish Pimple talks? Bork, 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 doopy, doopy,
doopy, bork, bork, bork. One of these is a drug. I think... Wait, what were the other two?
It was Mogi's, Sluggo, or Swedish Pimple.
Yeah, I'll go with Swedish Pimple, too.
Yeah,
I think it's probably one of the others.
It's definitely one of the others, yeah.
I would rather that it was Swedish Pimple, because that's funny. So
it is funny. Swedish Pimple is actually a very common ice fishing lure, and it is the Mogi's, which are a tranquilizer.
Okay.
Yeah, very popular in the mountains here in New Hampshire. Okay, Senko, Deadly Dick, or Red Devils? Senko's, Deadly Dick's, or Red Devils?
I think Deadly Dicks is a lure because a lot of companies that make lures like to give those lures kind of naughty names. So
they sure do.
I'm going to eliminate that one.
That's fair.
What were the other two?
Senko or Red Devils.
What do you think?
Red Devils sounds like some sort of a pill. But it could also be a lure, but it does kind of sound like a pill.
I think you should
stick with
that.
It could be like a red, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's actually a barbiturate. Yeah.
Ah, okay.
Oh, so good job, right. Donna.
I just guessed.
Donna knows her drugs.
She is from Colorado.
Yeah, no, I don't. Okay, I don't know my drugs. Coloradoans, barbiturates are not legal here.
Not yet. All right. Speedball, beetle spin, or rattle trap? Speedball, beetle spin, rattle trap.
Oh, it's speedball. Yeah, that's what killed John Belushi.
That's right. Yep. Got cocaine and heroin mixture. Delicious. Mm-hmm. Number five. Mm. I know. Poor John. Pencil popper, little Cleo, or zigzag? Pencil popper, little Cleo, zigzag.
Zigzag probably is how a lure actually moves in the water, so I would guess that's a lure, wouldn't you?
Or do you think? What was the first one?
Pencil popper, little Cleo, or zigzag?
Oh, this is a tough one.
Little Cleo isn't weird enough to be a drug, don't you think?
But maybe it's just normal enough to be a drug. I was going to say Little Cleo.
Okay, we'll go with your guess.
It is not. And in fairness, zigzag, and zigzag's not truly a drug. It's rolling papers for drugs.
Oh, okay. You're so sneaky.
That's on me. All right, one more, and this is for the game point. You should know this if you're from Florida. You should know this one for sure. Rooster tails, spin or Reno or dolphins?
I don't know that one.
What part of Florida are you from?
Southwest Florida.
Southwest. Name a town in Southwest Florida.
Naples, Fort Myers, okay. Right in between there.
Yeah. All right. You should know this one. Rooster tail, spin or Reno or dolphins?
Oh.
I'm going to guess dolphins? That rooster tail is a type of marijuana.
I'm going to say dolphins.
You don't agree on this one. All right, so we're split on this one. Rooster tail versus dolphins is definitely not rooster tails. It is dolphins.
Hey.
Dolphins is a name for ecstasy, as you know, Paul. So good job, you guys. Nice job on
as he knows. I doubt it. neither of us are that cool, so
Well, the good news is we're almost done. You did a great job. I'll give you both a prize for that one.
So, yay! What do we get? Right. A new car?
You get to come on the Fish Nerds podcast and plug your stuff.
So
speaking of plugging,
what a great prize.
Speaking of plugging stuff, I got to do a quick promo here for the Mystery Tackle Box, which is our sponsor this month. Mystery Tackle Box is a monthly subscription tackle box where every month you get a new box in the mail, and it says hashtag Happy Dance on it, and in there is a bunch of fishing lures, and we don't know what you're going to get until you get them. If you go to mysterytacklebox.com and enter promo code FISHNERDS, all one word, you save $5 off your first box, and it's an affiliate, so that means I don't get paid unless people buy it. So if you want to support the Fish Nerds, buy this, and you can cancel any time. Hint. So do it. So that's our promo. And next segment up, we have Speak Up for the Effin' Blue. Andrew Lewin, from the host of the Speak Up for the Blue podcast, joins us to talk about conservation news in our new segment, Speak Up for the Effin' Blue.
Welcome to the Speak Up for Effin' Blue Ocean News Update. I am your host for this segment, Andrew Lewin. Thank you very much for joining us, and thank you, Clay, for allowing me to tell your audience and give them updates on what's happening with the ocean. I'm going to make this one quicker than last time. There are two stories that I want to cover. The first one is Rob Stewart, famous scuba diver, famous filmmaker, the documentary Sharkwater. He passed away back in January of an unfortunate accident scuba diving And his family is suing the person who certified him right before he went out and did the scuba diving. We're going to give you all the updates on that and what happened and why they're suing and what you think about that. As well, the other story is there is an Arctic researcher who did a great post in The Guardian, put up an article and said, hey, why is the government, the U.S. government, taking down all the Arctic data and all the Arctic links to planning and processing and how we manage, how we're supposed to manage the Arctic from their websites? What's going on with this? We've never seen this before. This needs to stop. So we're going to talk about that as well. So first story, and by the way, thank you very much. I am a host of the Speak Up for Blue podcast. So if you ever have a chance, head on over there. But after you listen to Fish News, of course. The first story we're going to talk about is, you know, Rob Stewart. Tragedy hit the Stewart family in January. Rob Stewart passed away in a scuba diving accident. Rob was filming for his next installment of Shark Water. Now, of course, a lot of you may remember Rob, or may not, from his famous documentary that he made, an independent documentary, about sharks. And essentially what he did is he put shark finning in the public eye. Not a lot of people had known about shark finning. Of course, researchers had, conservationists had, a lot of fishermen might have, but it wasn't really worldwidely known at this point. So shark water really put in the map. That was released back in 2006, I believe, 2007. Got some awards and whatnot. He was filming for his second installment of Shark Water, kind of to give us an update on what's happening with sharks, what's happening with finning, and so forth. It looked to be like it was going to be a good film, which I believe it's still going to be released. However, when he was filming for this, he needed to go to pretty deep depths for this one particular dive in the Keys, the Florida Keys, and he had to use a rebreather to go down. The depths were about 300 feet, if I remember correctly. The story happened back in January. Anyway, he went down. He got certified the week before he did this this dive. Got certified in a rebreather, so it's different than your regular scuba tank, and it required a sort of a different method of scuba diving. I'm not going to go into the details. Anyway, usually after you do this, there's certification. You're certified, but usually what happens is divers will do no more than two dives a day. They decided on this day, his instructor who certified him went out with him as his dive buddy. They decided to do three dives. The third dive was to unhook a hook that they had on the ship that they were diving on. And unfortunately, that's where the action occurred. On the way back up, something happened with both divers. When they got to the surface, the instructor that was Rob's dive buddy sank back down. There's no, I guess, life jacket on a rebreather. And started to sink back down to the water. The people on the boat that were looking after them went in to get the diver, brought the diver back on board. When they turned to get Rob, Rob was gone. They both blacked out at the top. The family is suing in a wrongful death suit, I guess, the instructor and his company, which has gone bankrupt under what I've researched. They're suing him because they said he should have known better to do three dives. Accidents happen. And what they wanted to do is apparently this happens more than we think. So they wanted to make sure that that this won't happen again. So they're suing the diver, the certifier, the instructor. And I want to know what you guys think. Do you think this is something that should have happened? Do you think in the lawsuit, do you think the family should be suing? In my opinion, I think they should. I think this like, as I did more and more research, this happens quite often. People, yes, they should have known not to go more than two dives. And Rob should have known that as well. He shouldn't have taken that chance, and he did take that chance, and unfortunately it cost him his life. The instructor should know this for sure. He should know the industry. He was specialized in rebreathers, and he should have known, like, hey, you know what? Yeah, if you want to go, you know, I'm not going with you. I'm not letting you go. So I think a lawsuit might be in play here, but of course I don't know all the details that happened that day. There was a big search for Rob. It took a week to find him, and they eventually found him 200 feet down and about 300 feet away from where the boat was originally located. It's tragedy. It sucks. It's a big hit for the conservation industry. It's not fair. We lost a big a big ocean conservation celebrity that does that did a lot of work in awareness, and he did a lot of work in other places too. So it's unfortunate. I think this lawsuit hopefully will stop these types of accidents. I guess that's why we have lawsuits. Anyway, let's move on to the next story. There was an Arctic researcher named Victoria. Once I get it here, Victoria Herman. She's an Arctic researcher, and she's pissed, guys. She's pissed at Donald Trump and his administration for deleting all the links that they have for the Arctic, their Arctic research. So Victoria's saying that major documents, links to documents that were talking about management, planning of the Arctic, future of oil and gas in the Arctic, and so forth, and of course anything climate change related, has been taken down off websites. Along with that, there have been huge databases that have been taken off, which allows access. The one good thing about the U.S. in terms of scientific research, for me as a researcher, was that in the past, they've always provided data and maps for free online. That doesn't look like that's happening anymore. As Victoria was saying, that all those databases, those links to the databases have disappeared quickly within the first few months of this administration. I'm not knocking on the administration because it's Donald Trump. I'm knocking on it because it's taking away freedom to information. It's taking away information that will help other researchers, not just government researchers, but other researchers and nonprofit organizations, help the government manage the oceans, help them manage the Arctic, especially the Arctic, which is going through some extreme temperatures these years, and we're losing a lot of Arctic sea ice. So, you know, she's pissed, and I don't blame her. You know, this is very very close to what happened with the Harper government here in Canada, where I'm from, a few years ago, where the Harper government got rid of all the old data that we had on hard copies. They got rid of them because they closed down a bunch. I think it was 29 libraries in total. And what they couldn't archive on through scanning, they actually burnt them, and they destroyed them. Not necessarily burning them, but they destroyed them. And we lost a lot of data, like hundreds of years of data and millions of dollars worth of data, which is a shame, because how can you go back and how can you understand how changes are happening now if you can't go back and understand what the world was like or what your country was like back then? So it's really disappointing to see that. Want to make you guys aware of that, because this shouldn't be happening. And you guys, if you're in the U.S. Or in any country where they're doing this, you should have outlets where you can voice your opinions, contact your local representatives, your state representatives, your senators, your Congress people, whoever that represents your area, your voting district. Contact them and say you don't like this. You want it to change. And the more people who speak up, the better it is. That's it. That's all I have for today. Just wanted to keep you updated on those two articles. I thought that was interesting. So thank you very much. I'm going to turn it back to Clay. Clay, thank you very much for allowing me to do this. I'm Andrew Lewin, the host of the Speak Up for Blue podcast and the host of this Speak Up for the Effin' Blue segment here on Fish Nerds. Have a great day. Happy conservation.
Okay. And hey, that was great. Did you guys like that Andrew Lewin guy?
Yeah.
Yeah, really good.
Yeah, fantastic. He sounds handsome, doesn't he?
Yeah.
I've actually never met him in real life. I don't know what he looks like. He's Canadian, though, so there's that.
Well, he has to be handsome then, because Canadians are beautiful people.
Or at least polite, which is halfway to handsome anyway. If you're measuring on that Richter scale of handsome, if you're polite, you're halfway there.
You're halfway there. Yep, yeah. It's true.
That's been my claim to fame. I'm halfway handsome. So, so good. All right, hey, guess what? We're all out of time.
That was so much fun, Clay. Thank you so much for having us on.
We've done a whole show. And one more time, where can people find the Varmints?
Varmints is on iTunes or anywhere you get your podcasts from. Our show notes are at Our show notes are at blazingcariboustudios.com/varmints. You can get all our show notes there and all our episodes. And we put out a new podcast every Thursday morning at 9 o'clock Eastern.
And I look forward to it every single week. I get excited about it. So it's one of my weekly now. I have to have my varmints. So that's it. You've listened to a few nerds when you should have been fishing.
We'd like to thank our families for supporting us while we podcast, go on fishing quests, and do all sorts of silly things that nerds do. If you would like to support Fish Nerds, you can go to patreon.com and search for Fish Nerds help us crowdfund this podcast.
Special thanks to Paul and Donna from the Varmints podcast. Find them anywhere you find varmints.
And until next time, follow the code of the fish nerd. Spawn early and often.
Avoid free lunches with strings attached.
Swim against the current every chance you get.
And be nice to animals.
Oh, I like yes. that. Be nice to fish. Perfect. Nice job, guys.
Whether you're looking to build a website for your business, your hobby, your podcast, or just for fun, Pear Networks is your go-to web hosting partner. Not only do we have the lowest domain price in the industry, starting at just $11, we've got hundreds of stunning website templates to help you stand out from the crowd. You're not a techie? Not a problem. With our easy DIY site builders, you can launch your impressive website without any technical know-how. And when it comes to security and updates, don't worry, we've got you covered. Our 24/7 US-based customer support is the best in the industry. Check out pear.com today to learn more. PAIR.com.